Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. The decade began at its high point. Y2K, the ultimate big round number of our lifetimes, after partying like it was 1999 in the internet bubble. And the millennium bug never did crash our computers, did it? Maybe it all went bad after that because we never figured out what to call this decade. The O's, the aughts, the zeros, the 2000s. Nothing ever stuck. So then came the litany of 21st century icons, and you know them all too well. In fact, the new issue of Time magazine has a cover story that calls this the decade from hell. Though I will say, before we talk to the writer, that it also gives us a vision of how things might get better in the 20-teens, even though we are all mired in a pessimism bias at this dreary moment. However, before we talk to that writer, we thought we would present you about a two-minute montage of some of the audio lowlights of the 20-zeros.
With all the talk of Y2K bugs and Y2K terrorists, well, now Y2K hackers ready to attack computers all over the place at midnight Friday.
Good evening. Just moments ago, I spoke with George W. Bush and congratulated him on becoming the 43rd president of the United States. I offered to meet with him as soon as possible so that we can start to heal the divisions of the campaign and the contest through which we've just passed.
Boy, it has been a dramatic morning as we've watched the little boy taken from the home by U.S. Marshals and then the reaction of the Cuban-American community.
Good evening. Today, our fellow citizens, our way of life, our very freedom came under attack in a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts. The victims were in airplanes or in their offices, secretaries, businessmen and women, military and federal workers, moms and dads, friends and neighbors.
States like these and their terrorist allies constitute an axis of evil, arming to threaten the peace of the world.
Gagan's superiors, including Cardinals Bernard Law and Humberto Maderos, supported and consoled Gagan instead of treating his behavior as a crime.
Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
We're already getting some pretty significant winds here in New Orleans and some significant rain as well as the first squalls from Hurricane Katrina start to batter the Big Easy.
Wall Street itself is a abstraction. There are many people who made big mistakes and many regulators who made mistakes, and we need to figure out what those were and make sure they don't happen again.
I think I would be making poor decisions if I didn't have to look into the eyes of a family member who had lost a loved one and tell them how grateful we are as a nation. That moment, I think, ensures that I am making the best possible decisions going forward.
Some sounds of the last 10 years, produced by our Jody Avergon. Y2K hackers, Bush versus Gore, Elian Gonzalez, priest sex abuse, mission accomplished, Katrina. Didn't even mention Abu Ghraib or tsunami. We could go on. Bernie Madoff, 10% unemployment. And okay, it was broken up by a little bit of hope and change in 2008. But the Time magazine that hits the newsstands today, as I said, calls this the decade from hell. Though it also gives us a vision of how things might get better in the 20-teens and references our pessimism bias at this dreary moment. Andy Serra wrote The Decade from Hell for Time, and he joins us now. Hi, Andy. Welcome back to WNYC. Thank you for doing this.
Thanks, Brian. Good to hear from you.
And The Decade to Hell from Hell, I mean, it's almost too obvious to ask why, right?
Yeah, I mean, and of course, you don't realize it when you're living through it. And I just, I guess it was sort of over the summer that I just started to think about it and say, yeah, geez, I mean, I just felt so wrung out. And then I realized the decade was ending, and I talked to Rick Stengel over a time and said, you realize this is the decade from hell? I mean, it really began, you know, it's like the 60s. When did it really begin and end? So it's not exactly on the decade, which, of course, is, you know, an artificial construction anyway.
Right, but there's no doubt the two big posts of this decade are 9/11 and 9/15, 9/15
yes.
being the financial collapse last year.
That's correct, and sadly, in between, there was plenty to go around, too. I mean, the Iran-Iraq war, the Iraq war and Afghanistan, Katrina, various financial meltdowns from Enron to the disintegration of GM, Bernie Madoff, and on and on and on.
And we should mention, I guess, that the montage and maybe this conversation so far, kind of U.S.-centric. We know there have been things going on all over the world, for better and for worse. Wars in Africa that have dragged on in the central part of the continent, sunken economies in other countries, et cetera, et cetera. So not to put too much of a U.S.-centric face on it, but to acknowledge it when we do. And I guess
right.
the main point of your article is that this didn't have to be the decade from hell, that we brought so many of these troubles on ourselves through hubris and greed and neglect. Is this a let's beat ourselves up article that people will read if they pick up time?
Well, I think so, quite frankly, a little bit, and I want to address that. But first, you know, I want to talk about that U.S.-centric point you made, because it's absolutely true. If you lived in China or Brazil, on the other hand, it probably was a pretty good decade.
Yeah.
So for us, more difficult, and, you know, a sort of changing in terms of, you know, America's dominance around the globe, perhaps. As far as this being, you know, our own doing, well, you know, sadly, a lot of that is true, Brian. I mean, you know, these things occurred because of neglect, because of a deferral of responsibility. I mean, you take, you know, 9/11, you know, we ignored a lot of the signs about the rise of al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden issuing fatwas against the United States. You know, we tried a bit, but not enough. You know, I talked about GM in Detroit. Obviously, that was a long time in coming, you know. And then even Katrina, an act of God, well, yes, except for the fact that we did not have adequate levees, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and other entities squabbled for decades about what was appropriate. They didn't do the proper modeling. And so, sure, the storm is going to hit regardless, but we could have done a much, much better job preparing the city.
Yeah, and with the Army Corps of Engineers being held financially liable in a court ruling last week, we just did a segment with someone down in New Orleans who was saying that was one of the biggest myths about Hurricane Katrina, is that it was a natural disaster because the storm itself didn't cause the devastation. It was the flooding. So it was really human failure with respect to the levees and the canal and so forth. So that's one of the things. And listeners, I have a feeling this is a contentious idea, Andy. So listeners, call up. Was this not the decade from hell? If not, give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or even if so, 212-433-9692 for anything you want to say as we get ready to bid farewell and maybe good riddance to this decade of the O's, the zeros, the noughts, whatever. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And how about Alex in Queens, who says this shows a real lack of historical context. Hi, Alex.
Hello, Ron. I just wanted to bring up the idea that to say that this last decade was the worst completely ignores at least the 70s,
not the worst. I mean, I think, you know, in fact, stay there, Alex, but originally, Andy, if we can get behind the scenes here a little bit,
yeah.
I think your article or the cover was going to say the worst decade ever, which was going to be a little tongue-in-cheek, because then you would go on to say, well, obviously it wasn't worse than the Civil War and, you know, World War II and probably the Great Depression. So you changed it to the decade from hell.
That's correct, and my conceit always was the decade from hell, and I thought that, you know, if the worst decade ever was just to be provocative or a little tongue-in-cheek, that was too fine a point, and it was also disrespectful of, you know, all these families who suffered so much, say, in the 1930s and 1940s.
But, Alex, go ahead.
Well, if this is a decade from hell, then the 30s and the 40s and the 70s must be the decades from super hell or something weird like that. I mean, just thinking about the 1970s, you had the Vietnam War, beginning with the Vietnam War, ending with the Iranian hostage crisis, inflation in, well, I think, double digits, and unemployment at double digits, or at least close to it by the end of it. I mean, it just seems that there's a lack of historical perspective in calling it. I'm not saying that everything went right this last decade, mm-hmm. but the 70s right. have at least an argument to be made.
Right. Alex, thank you. Well, 70s, you know, certainly there was a big economic crash. I don't know how point by point you can go through this, Andy,
well,
but...
It's very interesting. I mean, I sort of, you know, grew up in the 1970s. I was a kid and a teenager, and you know, I was kind of unaware of how bad things were. You know, you realize in my town, not a single building was built. I remember gas lines. So a lot of it's perspective. On the other hand, I had a great time growing up. Now, of course, I've read all about it. I've studied the 1970s, so I'm cognizant of it. But maybe there is some sort of bias about that. And I will also admit that living in New York may be, you know, one of the worst places to be in terms of your perspective, because, you know, I had friends who were killed in 9/11, and then I had friends who were, you know, lost their jobs in the financial meltdown. So perspective is always an important part of this. And as I said, I would never say that this decade was worse than the 30s or 40s. But I do also think it was a turning point. You know, ever since World War II, we won World War II, and then, you know, we defeated communism, and I think we had this feeling, you know, leading up through the 90s of this, you know, staircase climbing higher and higher, ever optimistic, thinking, you know, the end of history and all that, and really, you know, it wasn't the case.
Yes, and I you know, that gets into the bias, which I tend to call the inertia bias. So in 1989, after the collapse of communism, people thought everything was going to be great. People declared the end of history. People
right.
should have known better and thought everything was going to be looking up and up and up. Same thing in the late 90s. Now, nobody can see where recovery is going to come from economically. So we were talking about this with David Leonhardt from The Times last hour.
Yeah.
Economics columnist, who says, you know, nobody could have predicted the internet bubble when the economy was in the dumps in 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody could have predicted the fast growth in the late 80s when there was 10% unemployment in 1982, because they didn't see where it was going to come from. So we're all always locked in this bias of thinking the way things are going right now is the way they're going to continue to go.
Yeah, I think that's right, and I mean, that speaks to this other point where you suggest that people were maybe way too optimistic in 1999, and we're probably a bit too pessimistic right now. We extrapolate and think things are going to continue the way they are, and, you know, unexpected things happen, as you suggest, Brian. I mean, that's what defines these decades, and you could make the case that we're perhaps, you know, the history doesn't work this way, but perhaps we are due for some, you know, positive developments in terms of new sources of energy, in terms of solving the West conflict with radical Islam somehow. You know, these things happen, and of course all the things I can't even imagine. If these things happen, you know, they're going to produce dividends economically, socially, culturally, and we'll feel a whole lot better.
Andy Serra from Time Magazine, his cover story, The Decade from Hell. Brandon on the Upper West Side begs to differ a bit. Hi, Brandon.
Hello there.
So?
Well, I think, you know, I used to work at Google for 3 of these last 10 years, and I think we'd probably beg to differ. Was this a bad decade? You know,
it's a good decade for Google, that's for sure.
Well, and I think as a result, consumers, you know, that's the only way the company survived is because consumers got so much value out of it.
Okay.
Well,
thanks.
You know, I will just to jump in, you know, first of all, I absolutely agree. You know, one of the real beacons of the American economy and American society and culture is information technology and the things that Google has produced, Apple has produced, Facebook. I mean, think about that. It's transforming our society and in a lot of positive ways. On the other hand, you know, just take a look at Google and how disruptive that's been to huge other segments of the economy and the internet in general, in terms of, you know, decimating newspapers and magazines and people who work there. So, you know, it's sort of like for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Well, I would say that's the perspective of somebody from Time Magazine.
Well, I don't work for Time Magazine. I work for Fortune Magazine. But I think you're absolutely correct. I don't disagree with you at all. But, you know, I think what I'm saying is absolutely the case. You know, for everyone who gets hired to work at Google, there are people who lose their jobs.
in the media business, in the traditional media business, and that's just a fact. It's not a bias.
All right. Yes. Well, you know, we had a conversation like this on the show yesterday, so we won't recap it. But we had Jeff Jarvis and a reporter from the Wall Street Journal on whether Google is responsible for the old media's problems or not. And certainly there are a lot of people who say, were there no Google, the old media would still be sinking today. A couple of people calling in with names for the decade. It's a little late, but Marie and Flatbush, what would you have called it?
The greedies. I particularly liked the caller who named the baseball stadium Debits Field, and I think the greedies will do nicely for the decade. We are just wrapping up.
Thank you so much. And Mike in Suffolk has one, too. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
All right.
I just wanted to let you, I really appreciate your program on every day. I really love listening to it. I really appreciate it being there.
Thanks for saying so.
My call for the 80s would be, you know, we say the 80s and 90s, and instead of the 00s, I always call the uh-ohs. So I guess that kind of sums up a bit, the uh-ohs and the problems that we had during it.
Thank you very much. So we have the uh-ohs, Andy, and the greedies. And one of the traits, as you look at the ways in which we brought these problems on ourselves, besides greed and hubris and neglect, is something that you called economic narcissism. Economic narcissism. What does that refer to?
Well, I think what that suggests is that, you know, we forever believed that the U.S. economy was impregnable and that we would always be growing and that we could rely on financial innovation to sort of fuel the engine of growth in the United States. And I think it also, you know, speaks to the fact that we believe that we could simply march down to Best Buy and buy a giant HD flat screen TV that we couldn't even fit in the shopping cart and that we couldn't even afford, but we could simply put it on a credit card and not worry about paying and march right out of the store. And, you know, that kind of sentiment is obviously very dangerous, and, you know, it helped precipitate, you know, the crisis that we find ourselves, we hope, emerging from.
Jeremy in Shelton says, decade from hell, maybe in certain ways, but let's take a few steps back. Right, Jeremy?
Yeah. Hi, guys. How are you?
Okay.
I was just going to say, you know, I think it's important to put things in context. I mean, 10 years ago, I was a student, and 10 years later, I've got the freedom to practice the religion that I want, the economic opportunity to find a job. And, you know, even a decade from hell, I think it's still a wonderful decade. I believe in the American system.
Jeremy.
Right. I mean, 2 points there. I don't know, Jeremy, are you from the United States? Are you from an immigrant who's come to another country or come from another country?
I was born in Europe. And
right.
I came to this country when I was 9. And I have a lot of family that's still there. And I appreciate the difference. I mean, the unemployment rate, for example, in France is consistently higher than America. And I appreciate, you know, I appreciate being here.
Absolutely. I mean, we're still a beacon to the world. I mean, to suggest that the American dream is over is completely false. I mean, it's more like this has been tough medicine, Brian, and a slap in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is you have to be careful. You know, I was talking about my childhood and growing up, and, you know, I have kids too, and I wanted to be careful about talking about this in front of them because it's just kind of a bit of a downer, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I did mention it to them, and they're like, what are you talking about? It was a great decade. I mean, the Yankees just won the World Series. I mean, right? We don't see the optimism, particularly of young people, and I think that's powerful, and thank God for it.
I have two kids, too, and, you know, as far as they're concerned, the future is so bright they need to wear shades.
right, exactly.
So, all right, let's see. I guess we've cooked it here. So do you want to say one other thing going forward, any other long-term trends, you know, since I know you wrote this for Time, but you're managing editor of Fortune.
Yeah.
So any long-term trends that signal economic recovery for America, or even while we know there are trends that signal economic decline? I mean, I don't want to write it off as a decade from hell or the worst decade ever too easily, but I also don't want to wear rose-covered glasses. And when we look at the long-term economic trends, we certainly see other countries getting up off the mat in the way that they weren't in any of our lifetimes, and the aging population of the United States as serious, serious economic challenges.
Yeah, I mean, there are always changes and transitions like that. You know, Brian, nothing's ever static, and obviously China's going to continue to grow faster than we are. I shouldn't say obviously because you never know, but I would think that's going to be true.
And Chinese growth isn't necessarily bad for the United States altogether,
no,
is
not.
It, right? It's a huge market, for one thing, for exports.
It's a huge trading partner, and, I mean, that's a whole other discussion that we could get into. And so there's that, you know, in terms of this cycle that we're in right now, and I think the recovery is going to be slow. On the other hand, you know, employment is always the last thing to come back. So I think that that's something to think about. And then, you know, lastly, the stock market. You know, the stock market grew tremendously in the 1990s. In this decade that we're ending right now, it was down for the entire decade, which
right.
is pretty unusual. And,
yeah.
and again, just sort of from the inevitability standpoint, at some point, there are going to be some of those things that I talked about, some unexpected events, probably, you know, positive ones, that will make the stock market go up and revert back to the trend, the long-term trend of growth, because America is still growing.
Who remembers NASDAQ 5000? Andy
Serwer,
managing editor of Fortune magazine, has the cover story in the New Time called The Decade from Hell, and I'm going to name the coming decade the 20-teens right now, just so there's no confusion. There's nothing sexy about it, but people are going to, oh, I don't know, the 2010s, or what should I call
right.
it? I think that was the curse, since nobody ever figured out what to
right.
call this decade. We went down and down. So I hereby christen it the 20-teens that we're about to enter. Are you ready for that?
You coined it. I'm ready.
Thanks a lot. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And, you know, just last night at the White House, the most powerful Desi was there, the Prime Minister of India. And we will talk in a minute to the Executive Director of DRUM here in New York. That is Desi's Rising Up and Moving, a South Asian community organization in Jackson Heights. Stay with us.